Thanks, David, and thank you all for coming today. Water is a very important issue at the moment, and it's good to be able to get some facts out about water, particularly now we're out of the madness of an election campaign and the impossibilities that went with that with getting sensible media coverage. I'm just going to start off by saying that one of the challenges with water in Sydney is that we are a growing city. Every year about 55,000 additional people get added to the city, and a lot of those are in established areas, but a lot of them are also in greenfields areas, particularly in Western Sydney, in the north and the south. And just keeping up with the demands that that makes and the pressure on inner urban growth means that just in a steady static state, Sydney Water would spend about $500 to $600 million a year, like clockwork, on renewals and on new growth. But I want to start off by saying that we've got population growth, and we've also got a problem with the rainfall that I want to talk to you about. The first picture that I want to show you is actually one that I've previously pinched from Professor Cullen. It shows the, and I know a lot of you won't be able to read this, but up the top of that chart is rainfall over Sydney's dams. And it starts off in 1909, the chart, and runs up to 2006. And all cities in Australia, excepting Darwin, have rainfall charts that are similar in nature to this. They don't have a 50-year cycle, and some of them are showing less rain than we are, and they're all pretty scary. But in Sydney's case, for the first 50 years of the last century, from the early 1900s through to basically the end of World War II, there was very low rainfall in the catchment. And then from the end of World War II up through to the middle 90s, there was considerably more rain. And the climate experts are now telling us that we appear to be in another 50-year cycle of low rain. But what's particularly scary about it is that the low rain that we're now getting into is lower than the previous 50 years of low rain. And what that means is shown in the bottom half of the graph, which is about the inflows into the city's dams, low in the first 50 years, higher through the last 50 years, and then the 50 years that we're currently in, considerably lower than they were in the sort of 1909 through to the end of the war period. There's not a linear relationship between rain and runoff into dams. Lower rain means significantly lower runoff. So we've been getting less water into the dam systems and our population's rising. One of the problems that Sydney's been grappling with is uncertainty. We've only got data going back to the late 1800s, and the Sydney Catchment Authority, who are in charge of dams, have currently got some scientists at the University of Newcastle doing some research on stalactites and stalagmites at Wombeyan Caves. And through that work, you can tell how much rain there's been each year, in much the same way you can tell from trees and the circles in trees how old the trees are. So when that work's finished, and it's coming to a conclusion in the next few months, I understand, we will have centuries of data in the Warragamba catchment, and that will help us get a better grip on the climate data that we're looking at. But in the interim, we've got a city that's growing and less rain. What we're doing to combat this is not just one thing, but a whole number of measures. And I wanted to start off on one that is very important to Sydney Water, and that's recycling. This chart starts at 94-95 and runs out to 14-15. And in 94-95, Sydney was recycling less than 2% of its water supply. which is not very much. And that was mainly used for irrigation around sewage treatment plants. If you had a playing field nearby or a golf course, then you were dead set on to get some irrigation. It was simply treated to take the things that make people sick out of it, and it still had plenty of nitrogen and phosphorus, so very good for irrigation purposes. As the 90s went on, Sydney Water started to put in place the biggest residential recycling scheme in Australia at Rouse Hill, and that scheme's now servicing 16,000 homes, and we are now expanding it so that it can serve up to 60,000 homes. And that scheme is in the northwest developing sector of Sydney, and there are a number of major recycling schemes going in of that kind, both in the southwest of Sydney. The Southwest Sector Development and the Growth Centres Commission will have recycled water. There's a scheme going in at Quakers Hill. There's a scheme going in at Hoxton Park in Liverpool. And frankly, anywhere where there's a major development going on, the developers are putting in dual reticulation schemes. Now, the way they work is houses get two sets of pipes, and the purple pipe you can use for toilet flushing and on your garden and in certain circumstances for your washing machine, but it's not advised that you drink it, though if you did, you probably wouldn't get sick. In fact, we've had a few cross-connections and people haven't got sick. And in fact, they said they didn't notice, which I always find a bit strange because the recycled water does taste a little saltier. The other major scheme, so that sort of picked the recycling efforts up through the late 1990s and into the early 2000s. And in 2006, we commissioned a major recycling plant at Wollongong Sewage Treatment Plant, and that's providing very clean water to BlueScope Steel to make steel from. And that water is treated to the level of the raw water in Avon Dam. The characteristics are very similar. And it's allowed us to save 18% of the Illawarra's water supply. So we're very pleased with that plant. It's now being extended to provide some water to wash coal down there at the coal loader and to provide for the golf course and possibly, if they wish, to the Dragons Wind Stadium, which is just up from the golf course. That's the sort of first kick in 0506. The next two parts of this graph always remind me of what investment bankers refer to as the hockey stick effect, where people show you profit forecasts and therefore how much their company's going to be worth. It always looks like this. But the first big kick up here is a big recycling plant that we're building at Fairfield Sewage Treatment Plant that will provide recycled water to Smithfield and Camellia, industrial users. And the final big kicker is a very large advanced water treatment plant at St Mary's. And that plant's taking effluent from Penrith, St Mary's, Quakers Hill and Riverston. And it'll be used for industrial and residential, but it will also be used to replace environmental flows in the Hawkesbury River. And if any of you are users of the Hawkesbury River, you'll know that it's very weedy. And that's because its nitrogen and phosphorus contents are very high, and the high level of treatment that we do to the recycled water that we put into it should stop that problem. And the water will go back into the river at Penrith, and it will mean that the environmental flows will come down the Nepean through the Upper Nepean, and the catchment authority can stop releasing water from Warragamba Dam for environmental flows, or at least stop releasing so much. This this is just a little run-through of the government's water policy. There's a Metropolitan Water Plan. You would have thought the way that some people were carrying on that there was nothing being done to meet the water supply issue. And the government some time ago thought about what needed to be done to balance demand and supply. And the short answer is there's no single fix to this. But what they looked at was out to 2015. And what they looked at was how much have we got in the dams, and that's the large part of the pie. And then they looked at what we needed, and we're about 300 gigalitres a year short, which is a lot of water, for 2015. And three sets of measures were put in place. The first was various measures put in place to save water, and one of the biggest of those was for Sydney Water to stop its water system leaking. We're currently running our leaks at about 8.5% of the water supply, and it used to be 12.5% before we started trying to save water seriously. We've got 23,000 kilometres of pipes, and they tend to leak where there are joints, and we've got plenty of those. And just to get 8.5% in context, Singapore is at 5%, probably the lowest in the world. London was around 20% until Macquarie Bank got stuck into them. And you will find, if you've been in London recently, that Thames Water is digging up all the streets and repairing leaks. And they're aiming, if they can, to get down to sort of 10%-ish. The Israelis were through a couple of weeks ago and they told me that in Chicago, unaccounted water was at 60%. And that's partly leaks and partly people, I suspect, just thieving water and people not going into certain parts of the city to read meters. All of these things are very important. You've got to be able to account for your water to be able to make some efforts to save it. But we're on target with that program and it's going very well. We'll keep hammering away at it and try to get down to 5%, but it does get more expensive as you go. And the technology that's used to do it is very sophisticated because you can't see the leaks, they're underground. The rest of the savings for Sydney Water's case were with business and in residences. And with business, some of our business clients are our guests at this function today, and we've been working with them to save water. And with a lot of our business clients, we've saved up to 70% of their water use. And if you're a big industrial user like BlueScope, it really brings your costs down. For office blocks like Jones Lang LaSalle's and Investor Property Group and others, they've been getting water savings of 30% after working through that program. And our hospitals have been able to get water savings of that level too, working on this program. With residences, the main thing that we've been doing there is giving everybody efficient shower heads and encouraging dual flush toilets to be fitted and putting aerators in taps. And while that's just a little thing, Sydney's water is supplied to 70% residences. There's not much industrial use of water because we're mainly a service industry city. So saving water in residences, it mightn't mean much to you as a homeowner, but when you add it all up, it has saved a lot of water. And the other thing that was in Sydney Water's area of consequence was giving some subsidies on water-efficient washing machines. Harvey Norman, I think, thinks it's their rebate, but it's actually ours. And there's been quite a big take-up of that. And BASICS, which is a regulatory requirement on developers to build water-efficient homes. If you're building one home, it's a rainwater tank, and if you're doing a major development, it's dual reticulation. The second part of our water savings was to do with additional supply, and the technology's gone to sleep on me here, but thank you. The catchment authority are mainly concerned with this. They've put the offtake pipes deeper into dams and they're looking at aquifers in Kangaroon and Leonay and Wallacea. And Sydney Water's contribution on that side was to build a desal plant if we needed to. Now, given the way that the rainfall figures were panning out, the government took the view that they couldn't just keep going, maybe, maybe not, maybe, maybe it'll rain, maybe it won't. And when the dam levels were at about 33.5% a couple of months ago, they said just do it and just keep going whatever happens to dam storages. And you might recall there'd been an on-again, off-again scenario with desal before, and you can't do that to tenderers too often because there are many of you sitting in here knowing how much money it takes to put in a tender. So we're going, and what we're going with is 125 megalitre a day plant. Perth's plant's 130, so it's about the same size. It's about 7 or 8% of our water supply. Some sort of operational rule will be dreamt up by some policymaker, but until our dam levels get up around 70 or 80%, again, if ever, then it'll be like a gas peaking plant and it'll run while we need it. We're building the plant so that we can add additional 125 megalitre modules with as little cost as possible. So it gives us tremendous flexibility. It's not rain dependent. If we're not sure about the climate change data, we can just keep adding modules. And we're building it with pipes that allow us to go up to 500 megalitres. And that means we can go up to 30% of the city's water supply quite quickly if we need to. I personally don't think we're likely to end up at the 30% of the water supply level for some decades, but we could run on the 125 for a few years and then find we've got to put another module in and then probably pause for a while. It's very difficult to tell because of the uncertainties about the rain. But the desal is very important. It's like a gives tremendous security to our supply, and it means that the catchment authority can drive the dams very hard. They don't have to worry about having absolutely no water. The other area I've already spoken about, which is recycling, so I won't go through that. But with those three groups of initiatives, savings, recycling and additional supply, we were pretty well there on meeting that 2015 target. This is just a graph about the various zones of recycling that's going on, and I think what's interesting about it looking forward out to, say, 2030 with infrastructure is that we're going to move towards a recycled network, and the kidney-shaped thing at the top left-hand corner of that diagram is the Rouse Hill, Castle Hill sewage treatment plants, and then the big plant at St Mary's underneath that. We've got a lot of growth going in west of Campbelltown, west of Liverpool, and in that area there'll be a lot of dual reticulation schemes. Sydney Water's just constructing a pipeline from Liverpool to Ashfield for effluent, and the effluent in that pipeline will be highly treated and available for recycling along Parramatta Road when we get round to turning it into the Champs-Élysées of the inner west. And from the end of that pipeline down through to the coast, there are more developments around Green Square and Alexandria, and possibly in the next decade, as those developments go up, we should be looking at putting a recycled pipeline from there down into the Botany area, where there is already a lot of recycling being done by Orica, who are cleaning up the bottom of the Botany aquifer. Sutherland Shire are looking at some recycling from Cronulla, and we're already doing quite a lot of recycling at Malabar for our own uses, and we will do some at Bondi for irrigation. And up in the Northern Beaches sort of area, there's residential development around Warriewood sewage treatment plant, and we'll provide them with recycled water. And the North Head STP is sewage treatment plant is also got a recycled plant there, mainly for our own use. Sewage treatment plants do use quite a lot of water, and it certainly doesn't need to be at pristine quality. And we can provide recycled water there for our own use, and we could also probably run it down the hill to St Patrick's. But the problem with moving recycled water around in Sydney is that once you get it to the coast, once you get effluent to the coast and you're trying to pump it back up the hill again, it's very expensive. And we've also got very developed suburbs, and ripping them up and putting in recycled pipes is very expensive. And we're talking billions here, not millions. I might just say something about potable water. We can treat water to potable quality. In Sydney, it's the economics of it isn't all that appealing. And the other problem with it is some of the concerns that the public health authorities have. And public health authorities say two things about drinking recycled water. One is it has to be put in a storage somewhere so you can check the plant hasn't malfunctioned. You have to have a safeguard. And the second thing is they like the shandy to be around 5% or less because there's drug residues in effluent. And half the women in Sydney would be on the pill, and every time I say that to the treasurer, and he says, yeah, and the other half of the population are on antidepressants. And any sort of drug that has sort of hormones and endocrine disruptors in, the health authorities worry about what effect it will have on children over a longer period of time. So to safeguard against those sorts of concerns, you'll find that recycling for potable use is always a relatively small percent. In Singapore, it's 1.2% at the moment, going up to 2.5%, and then they're going to hold it. So it is something that could, in due course, you know, be a small contribution to our water supply, but it's never going to be the answer. And one last slide, which is actually the most interesting, and it's probably just as well you can't read it too closely. The heavy blue line across there is our top water price, which at the moment is $1.63, and the a kilolitre, that's 1,000 litres. And the bottom light blue line is what basically most of us would pay for our water, which is $1.26 a kilolitre. And then the bar charts are sort of working up the cost of various water saving and recycling and desalination. And the leak reduction at the moment's less than 50 cents a kilolitre. The stuff that business has been doing is mainly in that category. And the DIY kits for houses. We pay the Catchment Authority at the moment about 56 cents a kilolitre for water from the dams before treatment. The Blue Scope Steel number is in there. It's below 60 cents. Water Fix is about the same sort of level. And then you start getting into things that are a bit more pricey, like Quakers Hill dual reticulation I put in there just as an example. The dual reticulation schemes are a varying cost, but most of them are over $1.50 and rising. Desalination is about $1.77. And Western Sydney Recycling, we haven't got the tenders in yet for either of these, so we don't know for sure. But Western Sydney will come in probably over $2 a kilolitre, and the Camellia Smithfield plant, same sort of thing. And for people who love rainwater tanks, I just put that in for you. That's the last one on the slide. Rainwater tanks don't cost Sydney Water very much because we just pay for the rebate. But if you think of the cost of 1,000, you put in a 1,000 litre tank, you can pay Sydney Water $1.26, or you can pay your plumber a few thousand bucks for a tank and a connection, and it works out at well over $4 a kilolitre. So one of the things that we've been using this information for is trying to work out how to prioritise all the many different things that we can do. And we are starting to get very good data about alternative costs. And sometimes you do things because they're good for the community. We have been watering playing fields and the like because kids haven't been able to play sport. It's been so dry. And you do things like provide environmental flows for other reasons. So it's not just price, but the cost of provision is going to get increasingly important. The other thing this graph will suggest to you is that the price of water is going to go up as sure as night follows day, and that indeed is true. And you can see there that the desal is just poking its head above the blue line, and that will mean the commissioning of desal will mean that the price of water needs to go up. I think the government suggested $125 a year, and along with the other recycling initiatives we're doing, you can probably add another $40, $45 to that. So a water bill at the moment is about $700 a year for sewer and water. So bills will be going up by, you know, $160 plus as soon as possible, in my view. And that's really all I wanted to say. And Peter will no doubt have very wise words of wisdom to say about his part. Thanks.